You're listening to the Unfiltered Life podcast with Charlotte Jonesy.
Hey everyone, it's Charlotte Jonesy here, the women's coach. Welcome to the Unfiltered Life podcast. On this show, I'll be sharing the highs and lows of life with helpful hints, tips, and experiences. I want to inspire you to step outside of your comfort zone, to turn your pain into purpose, and create your own version of success. As a life coach, mindset mentor, and mum, I am passionate about helping women through life's challenges. My guests and I will get uncomfortable so that you can feel comfortable, bringing you a real, honest, and unfiltered view.
So anxiety is actually, it's not something we need to suppress, it's something we need to listen to. You know, anxiety is a mechanism in our bodies that's needed. Like, we need that to survive. Sometimes we just need to listen to it, work on it, and be in tune with that rather than trying to suppress it. We're all trying to be like, I don't want to be anxious, I don't want to be depressed, I don't want to feel that way, but you're going to have emotions, and actually we need to work with them rather than against them.
This is the Unfiltered Life podcast with Charlotte Jonesy.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to the Unfiltered Life podcast. So today I've got a really special guest. This is Paige Joanna. She is a super creative craft queen, a lifestyle creator who speaks openly on her platforms about health, including living with her own chronic conditions. I admire her a lot, not only because she's one of my best friends who's been there through thick and thin, but more importantly, she's battled with her health every day, but still continues to fight on and smile as much as possible. Living with Crohn's disease, arthritis, and endometriosis normally is a challenge, never mind during a pandemic and having to shield because of it. I want to dive straight in because you're such a light in this world. I want to start with your diagnosis so people can just like understand your journey until now. So when were you diagnosed with your health conditions, and talk us through how you felt about it when you found out?
Yeah, so just to start off, I'm 30 this year, so I'm going to be 30 in May, so I'm currently 29. I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease when I was 13, so that's back in like 2003, so a very long time ago. And how I felt about it at the time, really I was just, you know, had no real sense of the gravity of having a chronic illness at that age, and didn't really understand it. I don't think a lot of people did really back then. There wasn't as much knowledge about it then, and support, and neither myself nor my mum really understood what it was. So you kind of just went with it, to be honest, did what the doctor said. And then I had an operation at 15, which was a right hemicolectomy. So they had to remove a section of my large bowel and reconnect it to my small bowel. I can go back into that sort of later on. But basically, that was kind of really when myself and my family knew that it was like bigger than just IBS. You know, people assume that Crohn's disease, is irritable bowel disease, can be very similar to that, but it's really not. It's quite an extensive disease and you live with it essentially. And then with the arthritis, I wasn't diagnosed until January 2019. I was getting joint pain from like 2018, and I was starting to get it in my wrists, and they thought I had carpal tunnel because I work on a laptop. So obviously they were just like, yeah, you've got this, you know, a lot of people your age have it, sort of thing. And you know, it just kept persisting, and I started getting it in my knees as well. And actually, if you don't know much about Crohn's, it's an autoimmune disease. And so is arthritis. They're both kind of in the same category, if you like. It's inflammation caused by your immune system. And therefore they diagnosed me with arthritis because of the Crohn's. It's kind of like an onset thing to that. So yeah, so that kind of was, you know, a fairly easy diagnosis. And I didn't really feel too bad about it at the time. I think it kind of like hits you a little bit more a few months afterwards when you realize, oh yeah, this is another thing that I have for the rest of my life, you know? So I kind of felt a bit heavy about it. Also being in your 20s and getting something like arthritis, which is, you know, there's a stigma around it being for old people. So you kind of assume like, gosh, if this is what I'm like at, you know, 28, 27, whatever, what am I going to be like in my 60s? It's not worth thinking about really. But yeah, so it's kind of a heavy feeling at first, but I'm completely like over it. I feel like you work a lot on your mental health, which I'll go into a bit more. But yeah, the endometriosis, I have to state that it is suspected. So I've never been fully confirmed with it. But it was when I was in my early 20s, like going through uni, I kept getting like pelvic pain and like pain during sex and stuff. And none of my doctors were really like taking it seriously at the time, because in your early 20s, you know, you're it's just not really, you just don't really get taken seriously by doctors. And it was like an emotional time because the pain was really unbearable, my pelvis. So, you know, I had to rule out that it was my Crohn's flaring up. I had to rule out any STIs and all of that business. And it took over a year for someone to really take me seriously and push me to go to a gynecologist. They basically just said to me, because of my Crohn's, I'm too high risk, they won't do a laparoscopy, which is the only way really that you can see endometriosis in a scan. It doesn't come up in ultrasounds unless it's severe. It doesn't show up in MRIs unless it's severe. So yeah, they won't essentially operate or do a laparoscopy. So it's suspected, not confirmed. So yeah, so I kind of live with those. Endo at the moment is kind of in control, but yeah, nice little plethora of conditions there.
And obviously being so young and having these kind of chronic conditions and knowing that it's forever, I mean, how is it actually living with these conditions?
Yeah, honestly, it really does have peaks and troughs. Like, it really depends on the environment I'm in at the time, the global situation at the time as well. I mean, we'll go into that a bit more, but yeah, highs and lows, I guess. I guess when I'm in remission, I am pretty good. And if anyone that's listening that doesn't understand chronic illnesses, especially Crohn's disease and arthritis and things like that, you can go into what they call remission. And that's essentially when your condition is, you know, it's in control. They've medically put you in control of your condition. There's no issues at present. You know, there's no inflammation in your body. And for all of last year, I was in remission until December, which again, we'll get to. But yeah, when I'm in remission, I'd say I'm pretty good overall in terms of like dealing with it and stuff. You feel like you're not living a normal, I say normal in quotation marks for anyone listening, you're living a relatively good quality of life. And you're, you know, you're battling something that's invisible to everyone else when it is flaring up. So it's an internal battle a lot of the time because no one else can really see it. So unless you have something similar, you don't really understand it, I guess. So
I was going to say, Paige, I just want to talk about that a little bit because living with something that is invisible is even harder because people can't spot it. Yeah. And just talk us through like an example of this. So this could be like, I've got a chronic condition, which I don't really talk about very much, but I'll have days where I'm feeling so lethargic and I literally just need to sit down. But nobody can see that because I look like a young, healthy person. Yeah. And likewise, this probably goes for you as well.
You get that quite a lot, actually, especially from the older generation. I don't like to put people in brackets because all people do it, to be honest. It's just, it's naivety. It's not a negative. It's just people just don't understand if they don't have it. People saying, oh, you're so young. Like, how can you have arthritis? You know, things like in the past where, depending on where I've worked at the time, I'm very thankful now I can work solely at home, which is great. But in the past, when my arthritis has been bad and my knees have swelled up and I can't walk, it can be quite disabling. So, you know, that is visual because you've got a visual disability at that point. But then even so, you still have to kind of confirm it with a doctor. You kind of have to give your employer a doctor's note to kind of rectify your type of work. And, you know, you're always trying to prove to people that it's there. Whether that's with a doctor's note or something, it's kind of like, here's proof, I'm not making it up. So that can be really tough when you're working for someone and you're having to kind of showcase that you have a chronic illness rather than them just believing that you're in pain. So that's definitely happened a lot. As an example, I'd say I've had through the years. I'm very fortunate I don't have that now because I work for myself. Yeah, that's kind of a big reason why I went freelance. And I suppose another one is just like when you're battling with a flare-up, for example. A flare-up is when your illness is having issues or it is problematic again, opposite to remission. And that can cause really bad fatigue because your body's constantly working away at fighting that disease in the body. So yeah, you have extreme fatigue, and it's not like tiredness. Like, you get a lot of people that go, oh yeah, I'm really tired as well. There's a real difference between like chronic fatigue and chronic illness fatigue and just being tired. Chronic fatigue, you get like something called brain fog, which I suffer with a lot. I struggle like to be able to articulate myself, to find words sometimes. There's so many different things. You get insomnia. It's almost like you're so tired, that you can't sleep. Your body feels like you've got a hangover. We all know what that feels like. But yeah, you feel like you wake up and you've got a hangover when you've not had a drink, because that would be lovely if you could. But like, yeah, you feel really rough, essentially. So yeah, I feel like those things, like having fatigue and then the comparison between people, like saying, oh, I'm really tired as well, it kind of goes back to that invisible illness thing, you know. People don't understand it. They try to relate to it, I guess, which we all do in life, but definitely a difference there with with that sort of thing.
Something that just popped into my head when you were speaking about that is Ibiza. That time when we went to Ibiza, it was incredible, and I will never forget, because we just wanted to have the first night, a few drinks, and this is how debilitating it can be. And you're in your 20s, of course you want to party like everybody else does. You want to have a drink, but just talk us through exactly what happened that night.
Yeah, oh God, you've just reminded me, it was crazy. So we're all sitting around, and I don't think it was necessarily the drink, I think it was the food that triggered it, especially when you go abroad. We were all just having drinks and whatnot, and bearing in mind my Crohn's is under control at this point. And when I say under control, it can just spring up and just have its moment at any point in my life. It's very, very annoying. And I just about, I remember it was like 10 o'clock when the DJs were just about to start. We're, you know, like we're ready to go. And I just started getting such bad pains, and I felt so sick, and I was trying to be sick to get the food up so I could just enjoy myself. And I just couldn't. And in the end, I had to ask, you know, one of the team members to take me back to the villa, or where, not the villa, the hotel we were staying. And yeah, the next day, oh God, honestly, I was up through the night battling this in my own hotel room. At that point we were meant to be sharing a room, all of us girls, and I was like, no, do you know what, I'm gonna go stay in the other one, I need to stay there because I'm gonna be up through the night. I could just tell that those were the symptoms, and I was vomiting until 5 a.m, and it didn't settle until then. So I took myself to sleep, and I woke up to a bang at the door, and the girls were there already about to go to this hair salon, and it was all, you know, the itinerary was fully planned. And I felt so bad because I went to the door, just woken up from that bang, and I was like, fudge, I'd like slept through my alarm, and I just couldn't go. I had to sit it out, and I was like, you know, I'll meet you guys at the pool later on, kind of thing. And yeah, so it can hit you when you least expect it. And that particular occasion, yeah, you know, you're in your early 20s and you're a young girl, but it can just happen to you whenever, it's unplanned kind of thing. So yeah.
Okay, and then let's move on to like lockdown, because you've actually been classified as vulnerable.
Yeah.
And how has this affected your physical and your mental health during this time?
So yeah, most of 2020, I was actually in remission. So my Crohn's had got to a point where it was under control. So although I was in high risk category of COVID-19, I was put in the shielding group, which is because I'm on a drug called azathioprine. It's an immunosuppressant. It lowers your immune system, so therefore your Crohn's sort of stays in control. It's scientific, I guess. I don't really know how to explain it. Anyway, it essentially lowers your immune system to a safe level, but still low enough that, you know, it puts you at more risk of things like flu and stuff like that. So it kind of puts you in a higher risk category. So I've just found that last year I was able to like really rest for the first time properly in years, because we all overwork ourselves, and myself included, on top of having my condition. So yeah, definitely overworked, and then finally could have this like respite, if you like, and I was in remission. So I felt actually physically I was the best I'd ever been. Mentally, however, it was so challenging, because I just, you know, I think it's challenging for all of us in many different ways. But yeah, I just found it challenging, and then I had a flare-up in December, was hospitalized, which I know we're going to get into in a minute. And that's really when I found it emotionally and physically a struggle. Most of last year, I was very fortunate that, yes, shielding was difficult and I had to limit my outings. I felt like I could do that because I knew it was for the benefit of myself and for others, you know. That was really fine. I managed that quite well. It wasn't really until winter time / December that I really struggled. So, yeah.
And then you mentioned about being admitted into hospital during the highest times of COVID we're living currently right now. So when was it? In December, wasn't it?
Yeah, December 17th, I think it was. So again, it was so random. I was in remission at the time, and after doing so well health-wise all year, I was kind of smug about it, to be honest. And then I just had a day where I just ate a lot and I had a takeaway. And similar to what happened in Ibiza, that story I mentioned, I just had massive bloating in my stomach, really bad pain, like pain to the point where like I'm writhing on the floor kind of pain. And I know that's not good. And I felt sick. And I tried to just drink water and like just take it, you know, for what it was and just get through it. Sometimes when I have these issues with my Crohn's, I can manage it at home, but I just knew I wasn't going to, and I took the risk to go to hospital, which is scary in this time. And when I first went into A&E, I won't lie to you guys, I've had Crohn's for over half my life now, and it was quite a scary time because A&E was just so busy. I got left on my own for like 2.5 hours in absolute agony, probably, if I'm being honest, the most pain I've ever been in with my Crohn's. It was quite scary. And just seeing the healthcare workers in A&E, they're just so overstretched. And anyway, they also don't want to come to you as much because it's risky. So you kind of get the basic level of care in terms of like getting cannula put in and drugs and all of that kind of stuff. And then I don't know about you, Charlotte, but I went into this like middle ground ward where it's like you have to have a COVID test and they can't confirm that you don't have it. So they can't send you to a ward, like a proper bed, until you've had this confirmation that you're COVID free. So you're in this kind of like limbo waiting area in a bed that's just like in absolute carnage for like a day and a half until you get confirmation that you're okay. And that day and a half, I tell you, it took bloody ages. It felt like I was there forever. And people just, I mean, I don't want to go into too much detail, but there's like people crying and it's just not a very nice place to be, basically. Yeah. So, I mean, you've got to look after your health and don't just sit on something at home, guys, if like you're struggling. But
it was exactly the same for me, Paige. Like I was in this limbo bit as well. Yeah. And actually, when I first got taken, I was taken to the hospital via ambulance and they didn't have a bed for about 6 hours. So I was in the corridor being sick. They don't know what's wrong with me. And I was honestly next to the red zone, the COVID place, the same as you, literally the same treatment. You're in agony, but you feel like you're not really being cared for, but you know that it's just because of what's going on. I also got transferred to this middle ground where you're just kind of waiting to know what's happened. And then the same happened with you. You were left over the weekend, weren't you?
Yeah, bless the NHS. So I finally got taken to a ward, and I must admit, the staff work above and beyond their payroll, and they're there for 12 hours and it's intense. Like I could not do the job they do. I got taken to a COVID safe ward, but it's still like an amber alert. You know, the whole hospital is, they can't say it's ever green in any area because of like cross-contamination and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And yeah, I got taken there on like, I think it was the Friday, and I remember being wheeled in at like 9 o'clock at night, and I just had a scan 2 hours before they took me. And I just remember saying to them, like, are you going to give me the results? I want to get this tube, I had a feeding tube into my stomach, and it was so painful. And I was like, guys, I need this out of my nose. It hurts so much. And they just couldn't give me any answers. And then it literally rolled on to Saturday again. Couldn't have any answers. I was kneeled by mouth, so I wasn't even allowed water, but I was like having naughty little sips because I needed it. I was on a cannula, a drip. I was getting my fluids, and then I still wasn't getting answers because I was there at the weekend. And bless them, what happens is the consultants go home. I don't know what happens, but you get these stand-in surgeon team and stand-in consultants, and they can't really give you the proper definitive answers because they're not your priority care team. So you're kind of just left on a Saturday and Sunday. They're there for emergencies only, and they don't do a lot. So you only really get answers on a Monday. So you're there in limbo during COVID time. It's so bizarre.
Technically no visitors. I was there probably about 3 weeks before you went into hospital. Yeah. And I was told that I could have, in the third ward that I went to, I could have my mum, but I couldn't have my baby and Matt, which they considered two people. I felt like I was going a little bit stir crazy that weekend. It really affected my mental health, that's for sure.
Yeah. You know, the only time I saw my husband was when he dropped my suitcase off outside the ward door, and that was it. I wasn't allowed to see him other than that. And yeah, I was in for 4 days and I didn't see anyone other than the people that were in the ward with me. Obviously, video call was a blessing, but you can't really chat because you've got so much noise and chaos around you. So I made good friends. I'm quite a chatty person. So I made good friends with the old ladies next to me. And, you know, that was really nice. And the nurses had a good chat with them. But yeah, you feel super isolated. There's no denying it. You know, I've been in hospital before many times. You know, this isn't new to me, but this felt new and scary because you don't have your family there to support you. So yeah, it was really bizarre, and it did affect my mental health. But I feel like I'm outside of that now. Like, I'm past that point, and I feel, you know, better. I've recovered from it mentally. But yeah, it does take it out of you for sure.
And I won't forget, it gave you some perspective, didn't it? Because this was before Christmas, and you were saying that some of the old ladies around you who you'd made friends with weren't going home for Christmas, and they were going to be there on their own.
Yeah, it makes me quite emotional to think about it, actually. It's really sad. And a lot of, you know, the nurses that were in hospital with me and looked after me hadn't seen their family all year. We were lucky, we had a summer, really. We were allowed to see you. I know I saw you once, and I saw a few of my family back in July, but they hadn't seen anyone all year. And then the old people, bless them, like, they weren't coming out for Christmas. I was lucky to get out, I think it was around the 21st or something. So I got out just in time to have my Christmas, you know, even if it was just me and my husband, I was home in my home comfort. So yeah, it definitely gave me perspective. I think all things do though. Like, I was in remission, and many days out of that remission, I wasn't grateful for being well. And it's such a simple thing to think about. You're not grateful for good health. And it's, no one really thinks about it until you've got a chronic illness, or you've got issues, or you've had a flare up, or you're in hospital, and then suddenly you've got this life sort of flashes before your eyes kind of thing. And you're like, shit, I really should have been grateful and really cherished those days that I was well. And again, those older ladies, bless them, they honestly got me through that time. They were so positive. They made me laugh. They made jokes. One of the old ladies, I'll tell you guys, she had her bum out and she was walking through the ward, you know, with her stick. And she gave me life in that time. And
just what you want all weekend.
There was one moment I did actually have to take myself out and go to the break room because they were rowdy. I'll tell you now, they were so rowdy. But yeah, they gave me such high spirits in such a situation that wasn't, like, great, you know. So yeah, perspective, massively. And I think we can all take perspective in moments of life like that, you know. Makes you reflect on the good things that you had and maybe didn't cherish at the time, but also just on a day-to-day level, like every day you wake up, you need to be grateful. You need to feel blessed to have that day. You know, there's always something to be grateful for. And I think health is one of the ones we all take for granted.
Absolutely. It's only until you don't have your health, that's when you start to go, oh, I should have been more grateful. I mean, I write a gratitude journal every night, and there's always one health related thing that I write. So it might be, thank you for my legs today, for like carrying me when I went for a walk.
Yeah.
Or it might be, thank you for my brain working, because sometimes it doesn't. Yeah. Thank you. But do you know what? I was saying this in my coaching sessions as well earlier. We forget, we take our mental health, our brain, for granted. We absolutely do. We forget that it is one of the most important organs in our bodies, and that we constantly need to train it. Yeah. And I always give this analogy. If your car breaks down, you go to a mechanic. If you want to lose a bit of weight, you go to a personal trainer. If you want surgery, you go to a surgeon. Or your mental health, then you either go to a therapist, a counselor, a coach. Like, it's a constant organ that we need to train. And we definitely, I mean, I take it for granted a lot of the time. I don't know about you.
Yeah, not in recent years. I've definitely been on a journey. But like, yeah, 100% I have in the past. I would say, I know we're going to talk about it in a minute, but like, I went through a meditation course back in like a couple of years ago. I did a 12-week course and it changed my life. And now I realize how important it is to like care for your mental health as much as your physical. Like, I have a specialist for my Crohn's, my arthritis, and my, you know, my lady stuff, a gynecologist. That's three different doctors that look after me. Why do we not have the same level of care for our mental health? Or why is it not like truly recognized that you have something like wrong with you, or you're a bit off balance, you go speak to someone or you go get help? It's just, yeah. So yeah, I've definitely taken it for granted in the past, but I'd say recently, like, definitely not. Like, I've worked on, it's like a daily thing that I work on, kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. It is definitely a daily thing that we have to work on, because otherwise we can go down a downward spiral. We are conditioned as human beings to actually focus on the negatives first before the positives. It takes more effort and more work to actually focus on the positives in life. That's because we're always in this constant fight or flight mode, because it's a survival mechanism.
Yeah, I was going to say, anxiety is actually, it's not something we need to suppress. It's something we need to listen to. You know, anxiety is a mechanism in our bodies that's needed. Like, we need that to survive. It's just unfortunate that in modern day society, anxiety comes from small stresses, because we're not running away from prey anymore back in like the caveman times, but we still have that mechanism because it's meant for survival, isn't it? So sometimes we just need to listen to it, work on it, and be in tune with that rather than trying to suppress it. We're all trying to be like, I don't want to be anxious, I don't want to be depressed, I don't want to feel that way, but you're going to have emotions, and actually we need to work with them rather than against them, which is what I'm trying to live by now, and it's worked so much better doing that.
So many people work against them. Yeah. And it's something that I was doing before this podcast with my clients. I was coaching them in that way as well, because a lot of us, we try to suppress our emotions, and actually all we're doing is pushing them down, down, down. And then they come to the surface again. And then you go, no, I don't want to feel this, down, down, down. Let's keep pushing it down. And then they come to the surface again. And it's a constant battle. And that's why people go, why am I feeling this way? It's because you are battling against it. And train our physical bodies a lot of the time, but we forget to train our actual mental.
I've got a good example of this. My husband, he works out 5 days a week. He won't mind me using him as an example, but he is really into fitness, like so much so. And I'm trying to get him into looking after his mental health as well. And he's been trying meditation techniques, and I've been sort of guiding him a little bit, you know, here, giving him some pointers. And in bed the other night, he had a few nights where he just couldn't switch off. And there was one night he was like, I can't switch off. I can't let go of what's in my head. I can't clear my mind. Meditation isn't working because I can't clear my mind. And I just said, well, where did you hear that then? And I asked him, I was like, who told you to clear your mind? Where did you hear that? And he heard a video that said empty your mind, empty your thoughts. And I just said to him, mindfulness is not about emptying your mind. It's not about letting go of thoughts. It's about listening to them without judgment. It's about letting them flow in and out without judgment. You're never going to empty your mind. Our minds automatically think. We can be present and think about our bodies and come into our present body, but we can never empty it, you know? And when I told him that, he was like, oh yeah. And I went, just allow the thoughts to come in and out like a train station, yeah? Like, imagine you're at a train station, your thoughts are the trains, but they just let them in and out. And when he saw it like that, he was like, oh, it makes so much sense. So why do we try and empty our brains? Why do we try and let go of emotion? They're meant to be there, you know?
I think actually that's a misconception of meditation and mindfulness, is that you are meant to clear your mind. My nan says the same. She always says the same thing. I can't switch off. I can't stop my thoughts. And I've said the same thing to her. It's not about stopping your thoughts. It is allowing some space just to be still for 5-10 minutes at least. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We are constantly dashing about or doing something or thinking about the next thing that's coming up. That's how our brains work. I think we think 60,000 thoughts a day or something around that. Don't quote me on that.
Isn't it 60,000 a minute? Not a minute, but an hour or something.
Actually, there's a lot of thoughts that... Do you ever get this? I've always thought this since I was a little girl. I've always had some thoughts that I'm like, oh, they're not right. Why do I have those thoughts?
Oh, 100%. Recently as well, it's something I've worked on, because I'm prone to quite dark thoughts and also obsessive thoughts. So if I get something in my head, I cannot stop thinking about that one thing. And it's really normal. And one thing I've dealt with when I've had cognitive behavioural therapy, counselling, all that sort of stuff, is a lot of us go, oh God, I don't like that. And I'll give an example. I'm so open about this sort of stuff because we need to normalize it. We went through that situation in Ibiza. I won't go into too much detail, but Charlotte and I were in a house invasion together, and it really triggered a lot of panic disorder in my body and my mental health. And I mean, she'll probably talk about this in more detail another time, I'm not sure. But after that, I had to do a lot of work, because I would leave the house and I would think, I'm going to get hit by a car today. Or I would think, this is how I'm going to die. Or I'd walk past someone in the street and I think they're going to stab me, you know? And those dark thoughts, I remember telling my therapist about it, and they just said, everyone gets it. And when she said that, I was like, oh. And at just that moment of realization that we all think like that, yet we all feel like it's so dark and dirty, and you dare not say that we think like that. But it's so common. It really is common. And like, yeah, I've done a lot of work to kind of get through that. I don't do that so much anymore because I was getting it, you know, daily. Whereas, you know, the odd thought might pop in here and there, but we all have negative thoughts, and it's like, they're not abnormal, you know?
I'm so glad we're actually speaking about this. I've never heard anyone speak about this, not even on social media. I listen to so many podcasts and I never hear anyone speak about these dark thoughts. There's negative thoughts, but I'm talking about the dark ones. Like,
yeah.
I think as an example, after I experienced PTSD as well, I would also think, this is how I'm going to die. Someone's jumped in through the window, or like I get scared that I haven't locked the door or the windows, or I've had thoughts in the shower of just ending it there and then. Like, they're really deep, dark thoughts, and I've never shared them. I don't share them with anyone either, and I think the only people that you feel comfortable sharing them with is probably a therapist, because you feel like you can share it in confidence, knowing that they're not going to judge you.
No, I told my husband before, and he's like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, you're okay. And I'm like, yeah, normal. And it's so weird because you have that contrast between talking to your therapist and telling them, and then they're like, no, you know, everyone gets it. It happens sometimes. You're out of balance, whatever. There's meanings for it. On everyone's different, obviously. But then you tell a friend or a family member, you're like, oh yeah, I had this feeling like, you know, I wanted to die or whatever. And they're like, oh my God. And they cannot comprehend it. It's like, why would you feel that way? But I think unless you've been in a dark place, you've had PTSD or you had depression, anxiety, whatever, or you've had bad mental health, there's some lucky few that don't ever deal with it, then you know it's, that's just kind of how the brain works sometimes. And yeah, I think it's so difficult when you tell someone, like, bless my husband, he's never really had that, so he just doesn't get it. Whereas, you know, it's so good, it's kind of a relief to kind of tell you and you understand it.
I'll be open and honest, the reason why I used that one as an example is because I had definitely postnatal depression, 100%. Yeah. I spoke to someone in the end, again, therapy, because I couldn't stop these dark thoughts. Like, I just had a baby. I should be over the moon. I should feel, you know, ecstatic. And I was putting, again, that pressure on myself to feel certain emotions, but they wasn't coming initially. Mm-hmm. And I will never forget just feeling so low, and to the point I had those thoughts. I actually didn't want to be here anymore. And I just had a baby because I just didn't feel like I could cope.
Almost like a failure for admitting it as well. I had it, sorry to cut in, but just very quickly after I got married, I had post-wedding blues that aren't really talked about. And you feel so guilty because you're meant to be on cloud nine. And I literally remember just being in such a deep depression afterwards. Yeah, it took me quite a while to shake that. You know,
yeah, again, that's something you never hear either, because after wedding you should feel a certain way, shouldn't you? Or all the pictures say that you should feel happy. I mean, Paige's wedding was incredible. She had two beautiful dresses, which one of them she actually got from a charity shop and embellished herself, which I told you, she's the craft queen. And I mean, she had pom-poms, like the photos were incredible. So you'd never know from those images or your videos that was going on afterwards.
So that's the crazy thing. On an outside level, I was happy. I've got a lovely new husband, you know, it's great. But I think you put yourself on a pedestal a little bit to be a married couple. Suddenly you think, well, nothing's changed. I'm not saying that was what triggered my depression. I think there was quite a few things, really. It was not having a purpose anymore, because like I mentioned earlier, I'm quite obsessive about things. With the wedding, I had that to work on for months. If not, I had 2 years of wedding planning. And after the wedding, I was like, right, now what, you know? And it was that feeling of like not having a purpose in my life that really shook me. And it put me in that downward spiral, I guess. Now I know, I can articulate it. But when you're in those moods sometimes, you don't really understand why you feel that way until you're out of it. And you're like, right, it's because I don't have a purpose. You know, you have to do the inner work to be able to get to the point where you can sometimes talk about it, like me and Charlotte are able to, because we've done it. We've been there, you know?
Well, when you've worked on yourself and when you heal, that's when you can actually compartmentalize it and actually speak about it okay and not actually feel those feelings, because we've dealt with those feelings.
Yeah.
You mentioned about Ibiza.
Yeah.
Just briefly. Mm-hmm. So like Paige said, we were in a burglary in Ibiza in Villa with our friend. It was actually our friend's Sophie's hen party. So that was ruined at the end by, burglars. Paige and I went through quite a lot of trauma being stuck in a locked bathroom, didn't we?
Yeah.
And it was something I've never experienced. It was like my worst nightmare coming true.
We thought we were going to die, didn't we?
Genuinely. And we knew that they had weapons because they were ripping out the safe, weren't they, that was next to the bathroom that we were in. We were in the locked bathroom. Mm-hmm. Thank God for that ensuite. We were seconds away from them opening the door.
Yeah.
I sometimes still get flashbacks. That's obviously PTSD.
Yeah,
and I have to have doors open now as well. When I sleep, I can't have a door closed because I'll never forget when I saw those shadows of their feet under the door. And like literally lucky for Paige woke up and we literally got ourselves in there. It's crazy, isn't
it? That's a crazy story. I put my phone on vibrate for the first time ever. And I'm so glad I did, because my phone was on mute because the girls had all gone out, 10 of them, and we stayed behind. We were on the ground floor. If my phone wasn't on vibrate, I wouldn't have woken up to all the phone calls from Lauren upstairs who had heard someone come in. And if I hadn't have woken up to wake Charlotte up, to instant reaction, get in that bathroom, it could have been a lot different. But you know, it worked out how it worked out, and thankfully we're safe. But it did cause us a lot of issues afterwards, didn't it?
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to talk about. Obviously going through something like that, so traumatic, how did you deal with it? What help did you get? And
Over the years, as I've mentioned, I've had anxiety sort of on and off through the years. I only really first got help for it in 2015. It's when I first moved to London, and I got CBT and I took some anti-anxiety medication for a year. And that kind of got me out of it and I was sort of fine. Also had sort of one-on-one counselling as well. Anyway, after the Ibiza incident, it was back in 2018, I think it was, that summer, about a week after coming back from that, I had a flare-up of my Crohn's disease and went into hospital for 5 days because of the stress and the impact that that had on my environment, my body, everything. It physically flared my body up to have an illness. So I kind of had that for about a month afterwards to focus on. So I really kind of forgot about what happened to me. And it wasn't until about a month after that flare-up, I suddenly realised I hadn't dealt with it. I hadn't properly dealt with the stress of it and the PTSD that I had from it. And same with you, Charlotte. Like, I'd hear loud bangs and I would get a panic attack and I'd have body shimmers and all that kind of stuff and sweating and going to the toilet a lot, which is a Crohn's symptom as well. But I remember what that night it happened, I honestly probably went to the toilet about 200 times every 5 minutes, and Charlotte will know that. You know, it was bad. And I had that for months afterwards and I lost a lot of weight. I went to the doctors and they said, well, we know we've already tried CBT, you've had that in the past, you've had counseling, did they work for you? And I was like, yeah, I guess, but this is different. I've got PTSD, I went through trauma. So they actually recommended, it's amazing, on the NHS there's this where I live in Southwest London, there's this meditation course for people that have chronic illness, and it's 12 weeks course, one day a week for 2 hours, and you go along and this woman would teach you techniques to meditate and different techniques. So obviously there's things called the body scan, there's loads of techniques I could go through, but anyway, I did that. And it was honestly life-changing. So the way I deal with anxiety in my body now because of PTSD is very physical. So it's not just mentally for me anymore. If I get anxiety, my body reacts so differently. I have sweats, I get shaky, I can't speak, I have panic attacks, that kind of thing. And every time I was noticing symptoms of panic, I could practice my meditation techniques that she taught me. And I found that that was like the most effective thing I've ever had for my mental health. Again, it doesn't work for everyone, I know, but if you really commit to it as like a daily practice, it really, really helps. And I actually wrote a list. I'll just quickly list through the other things that helped me. Listening to massage music, which I know sounds really naff, but it just sometimes gets you in a, like, a real zen state. And being more spiritual as a person. I feel like this year has really developed. So for me personally, reading tarot cards, having Reiki, just having a gratitude diary, reminding yourself of the positives in your life every single day, talking to family and friends, having a support system if you can, and just opening up to people and just things like that. I just felt were like the essential things that really got me through those bad flare-ups of like mental health, you know.
And obviously those are things that you practice all the time. What if you're having a really tough day? What's the first thing that you do? Say it starts bad in the morning.
If my morning starts bad, then when I've recognised it, because sometimes we all do it, I think, where you get a couple of hours into the day and you're like, why is this day not going right? I don't feel right. Something's not right. When you get that thought, stop and listen. And I do it a lot where I fight that discomfort that I'm feeling. And why have I woken up in such a shitty mood, you know? Stop, I meditate. So if I'm in a busy working day, even 5 minutes, sit down in a quiet space, just focus on the breath. I really like to breathe in for 5, hold for 4, breathe out for 7. And that really helps to like put my awareness back into my body rather than in my brain when you're overthinking, and just instantly snap out of it. And then sometimes you might need to do like extra work, like I'll journal. Sometimes journaling's really helped me in the past year. I used to think it was like something that's, you know, only some people did, and I didn't really understand journaling. And honestly, I've only started journaling in the past year and it's been unbelievable. And so I journal sometimes my emotions and then write my gratitude diary. And yeah, they're the kind of main 3 things I'd say that I do when I'm having a really shitty day. And that kind of helps me snap out of it. I still feel like I'm bad. I've tried those things that I know usually work. I accept it. I accept it's a bad day and I try not to unpack there. I know we often talk in our like girly chat, don't we? And if we're ranting to each other, we just need to vent. And sometimes we just need to remind each other, like, just don't unpack there. Allow yourself to have that day, have a cry. And you might not get over it until tomorrow once you've slept it off, but that's fine, and accept it. And I feel like they're the kind of things that I kind of live by now. And it kind of helps, I guess, during sort of bad days or troubling times, you know.
Just touching on journaling, because this is more of a new concept, I think, for a lot of people. We've heard of gratitude diaries or, you know, writing down what you're grateful for. That's been around for quite a long time, but now it's kind of moving over to journaling. So just from your experience, for a new beginner or someone who's never journaled before, what would you say to them and how do they get going or start?
First off, I cannot speak about this without giving huge credit to Barry Barina from Emerald Taurus, because I had some sessions with her. She's a Reiki practitioner and healer, and I had some sessions with her last year, and she taught me the art of journaling, and without her I couldn't have done it, you know. So yeah, a massive thank you to Barry. She's incredible. And I essentially started by looking at my life history. It's quite extensive, but she made me do the work and now I can journal. But you have to do the work first. As a beginner, I think you have to look back. You have to look at your scope of life and write down. So she made me write down all the things, the big life moments that maybe have impacted me. So I'm just going to quickly reel some of the mine off because I'm happy to share. One, my parents getting divorced when I was 6. Secondly, getting diagnosed with Crohn's when I was 13. Endo and arthritis, the health kind of picture, if you like. Something else that happened to me with my first boyfriend, which I won't go into detail, but, you know, sexual assault of some kind. And then the Ibiza moment. So they were like the big things in my life that I needed to work on, that I'd literally never worked on. I'd spoken about in counselling, but I hadn't actually worked on them. So things like, you know, the thing to your parents sort of thing is like you would write them a letter, an open letter. You're never going to send the letter. It's for your benefit. And you write that letter and you say how that made you feel. And same again with, you know, the person who hurt me in the past. I wrote them a letter and I said, this is what happened. These were the events. This is how it made me feel. And actually at the end, you then say, I forgive myself. I forgive you for doing it and whatever. And you work through it. And it took a lot. Like mentally, it takes a lot. I would say, don't try and work on it all at once. Work on it a little bit at a time. And once you've written those things, it's quite heavy and it's quite hard to do. But once you've written it, meditate, take some time out, maybe a week out if you need to. and just meditate and work through those emotions that might come up, write them down, happy or sad emotions that might come up, write them down. And then a week later, come back to what you've written, read through it and highlight parts. And I remember parts where I thought, I'm horrible or I'm guilty. Imagine reading that and thinking a friend has told you that story. What would you say to them? And then write that and be like, you're not this, you are this, you know? And then following on from those negatives, you'd write pages of things that you love about yourself. And so there's a lot of work that can be done. There's loads of probably things that you can find online, but those were the things that I started with. And now on a day-to-day basis, I kind of just write how I'm feeling. I literally just write it as it comes to in my head. It, let it flow. It doesn't have to be like, today I did this. Or if you want to write it like that, you can, you know? There's no right and wrong there. Get it out. Whatever you need to say, say it. No one's going to read it. It's for your own purpose. You know, if you want to write it like a short story, write it like a short story. If you want to bullet point it, like bullet point your emotions that day, go ahead. Whatever feels right for you in the moment. There's no right and wrong with journaling. It's just about getting what's in your head on paper. It helps to process it, articulate yourself, you know, that's it.
That's really, really good tips. I just think for someone who's starting out maybe on their spiritual journey or they don't know how to journal, but they've already done meditation because it's more available in terms of knowing what to do. I just think that's a really good way of understanding. Just touching on Barry and her Reiki, she's a Reiki practitioner, isn't she? And I've had it with her as well. I've also had a really transformational Reiki session. My first one ever was really heavy. I actually didn't know what to expect. I didn't have this one with Barry, but my first one I had was actually with someone I didn't know, and they were over my head when we were allowed to be next to people. Remember those days? I mean, to be honest, I don't really know what they were doing. I just know I had to close my eyes and think of somewhere. But it took me back to my childhood place, and I was in my garden. But they told me to think of somewhere lovely, somewhere nice, either a beautiful garden or a beach. And I went back to my childhood garden, which is not nice at all. It was in a council house. So it was just very basic with a swing. And I was literally sitting on a wooden chair. And then all of a sudden, like, we had stopped. And I just could feel this massive burning feeling in my head, which I didn't know at the time until afterwards, which is my third eye chakra. And I literally had to go to bed. I got back. I felt so overwhelmed, so emotional. I couldn't believe what had happened and how I felt about it. And I literally just went to bed for 12 hours. I was just out. And then the next day and the following week, actually, I felt really, it felt really heavy. But then all of a sudden, it was like after this week, something just clicked. And actually, it's all cleansing, isn't it? And I didn't realize. And it was like something had changed in me. I can't describe it. Like, and things started to happen. It was like I was unblocked from things that I was blocking, like as in I'd put blocks in my way. And actually it had all been taken away, and I could then actually receive. So that happened. And then I had it with Barry as well the second time. And again, the reason why I had it is because I felt so blocked. I didn't have the same overpowering feeling, but that's because I'd never done it before the first time.
Yeah.
Anyone who is considering Reiki, I would really recommend trying it.
Barry has services over Zoom, so she's someone who you could look at. The way I kind of see it, last year I had quite a few sessions weekly with her, and it just helped me to rebalance. I know it sounds to some people kind of weird if you don't really understand it. If you're very spiritual and you're open-minded, I think you have to be super open-minded with it. You have to let go. You have to go in with no expectation, because some sessions I'll feel nothing and some sessions I'll feel so strange, whether that's emotional or good or happy, you know? So yeah, I had a few sessions and I just felt like it helped me rebalance and regain like sort of peace and a purpose, and like just helped me find that kind of like zen state that I needed at that time, you know? So yeah, she's really good.
So kind of like wrapping it up a little bit, because I could speak to you all day, you know what we're like. speak to each other all the time. We do, literally every day on WhatsApp. And something I like to ask my guests at the end is like, how have you turned your pain into purpose? But I suppose if we're talking about your chronic illness,
yeah,
how you live with that pain, because it's physical and mental, how has it impacted you and how do you turn that into your purpose? Because you do things on YouTube. You do lots of things to do with, one of your videos I really liked was actually you were talking about Crohn's and how to create dresses for them or how to create clothes for Crohn's.
Yeah, it was kind of like sewing and chronic illness and kind of like the benefits of that. Yeah. Yeah, I used to do a lot more on YouTube actually, but I'll get to that in a second. I'd say when I'm in remission, like I mentioned earlier, my life feels somewhat normal and you kind of live good quality of life, standard, you know, normal person, I guess, peaks and troughs of days, whatever. But when the pain is bad and when I have a flare up, it can be quite debilitating and it can obviously affect me a lot more, which can therefore lead to like feelings of low self-esteem. I tend to like really have this like love-hate relationship with my body because my body isn't doing the things physically that I want it to do. This is like another podcast for another day, but Charlotte will know, you know, my husband and I are trying for a baby, like all these things are impacted with my physical health. So you have that kind of relationship with your body that you know, is quite tricky, and it takes like daily self-love and self-care, and obviously the mental health stuff that we've spoken about, you know, whether I'm in remission or out of remission and well, and whatever, like I still have ups and downs with my mental health and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, like turning pain into purpose, I guess. I feel like having an illness, because it is a part of my identity, it's not who I am, but it's a part of me and I have to accept that. And I have accepted that a long, long time ago. It kind of gives me that determination to prove myself, like not only to like to others that I can do it, but obviously internally that I can achieve the goals that I want to achieve, regardless of having a chronic illness. So I have goals in life. I'm quite a driven person. Again, not everyone wants to live like this, fine. But me personally, I have goals. I have things that I want to achieve. And I try not to let my illness set me back from that. I just have to accept that if I am flaring, that it's going to take a lot smaller steps to get there. But I have to just do it and just I visualize it. And if there's days out where I feel like I've taken a couple of steps backwards, it's okay because the end goal is still in sight. You know, things like the trying for a baby, the career goals, the getting a house, like they're all things that can happen, but they might just take a bit longer for me. So that's my purpose, is to just regain that control of my life, even if it will take a little bit longer, even if there are days I'm in pain or I feel like it's a setback, like I can get it. I can achieve anything that I want to. I just have to trust in the timing of my life and practice self-love, and eventually those things will come into fruition.
And that's exactly why I wanted you on the podcast. You literally have so many words of wisdom, and I think anyone who's living with a chronic condition, look to you for that positivity. Like, you are amazing at looking at the brighter side even when you're having your dark days. That's definitely something that's unique about you. I've loved having you on this podcast.
There's so much more I could say as well. I'm like, could talk for hours.
Well, I'm sure I can have you back on and let everyone know who's listening where to find you.
If you like creative, crafty content, whether that's sewing or cricket crafts or any just lifestyle things, I talk quite openly on my Instagram stories. It's just at Paige Joanna with two A's on the end of Joanna. And I do have some YouTube videos. Some of them are a little bit older now, but they are specifically about Crohn's, arthritis and chronic health issues. So you can find those over on my YouTube channel. I have a playlist specifically for them. So yeah, that's where you can find me.
Thank you, Paige.
Bye.
This is the Unfiltered Life Podcast with Charlotte Jonesy.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you loved it, please subscribe, download, and leave me a review. If you learned something new or just really enjoyed this episode, then why don't you share it with others by screenshotting it and sharing it on your stories? And don't forget to tag me so that I can see it. If you're interested in life or business coaching with me or any of my programs, then please head to www.charlottejonesy.com for more information. Hope to speak with you soon. If not, I will see you in next week's episode. Lots of love.